Vashyami Vishveshvara Vishvarupa. O my Lord, O gigantic Vishvarupa form, O Master of the Universe, I see innumerable hands, bodies, mouths, and eyes in all directions. They are unlimited. I cannot find the end of this manifestation, nor do I see the middle, nor the beginning. Bhagavad Gita was specifically spoken to Arjuna, and the Vishvarupa was exhibited before him at his request. He was awarded the specific eyes to see the Vishvarupa. Yet although he was able to see the Lord's innumerable hands and mouths, he was unable to see him completely, since Arjuna was unable. Since Arjuna was unable to estimate the length and breadth of the potency of the Lord, who else would be able to do so? One may only indulge in miscalculation like the frog philosopher. The frog philosopher wanted to estimate the length and breadth of the Pacific Ocean by his experience of a well 3 cubic feet large. And thus he began to puff himself up to become as big as the Pacific Ocean. But at last he burst and died by this process. Most probably we have heard it already 1,000 times, but when you hear how Prabhupada puts the words, it's again a festival of humor or something like this. But at last he burst and died by this process. This story is applicable to the mental philosophers who, under the illusion of the Lord's external energy, indulge in estimating the length and breadth of the Supreme Lord. The best path is to become a cool-headed, submissive devotee of the Lord. Try to hear about the Lord from the bona fide spiritual master, and thus serve the Lord in transcendental loving service as suggested in the previous verse. Nama Om Vishnu Paraya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Simata Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Darasate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paskatyare Shatane Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadara Sri Vasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Etat Shakta Bhagavato Daiva Karmatma Rupina Kashaladyat Vakaratum Yogamaya Valodayam. O Vidura, who can estimate or measure the transcendental time, work and potency of the gigantic form manifested by the internal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? The gigantic universal form who was manifested by the Lord to Arjuna had 3 aspects to it. Now let me say just this process of revelation showed three aspects. One was that Arjuna, although situated at one place in the universe, or more specific, at a battlefield, could see from this one location everything, all the different spaces which exist in the universe. And that was truly, how would you say, mesmerizing. In Germany, some devotees have launched the Veda Academy, which attempts to integrate the findings of modern science with the findings of the Vedas. And for that purpose, we have obtained, or not obtained, a castle was offered to us by a Nobel laureate, in micro photography. So the upper rooms of the castle are all full with these very, very intense microscopes, which can give you a glance into the most, into the smallest structures on the chemical level in the universe. And it is truly amazing to see the workings of the cosmic designer there, because of the small details. Look, it's so beautiful, it's so nicely arranged. He adds a little color to it, and then you can really see some great architecture going on there in the smallest structure. Maybe not smallest, but in the very small structures. Yes, and he is now in the process of designing the perfect microscope, the microscope of the 21st century, which is a microscope which can show you at once from three directions, you know, the element basalt, or anything which they want to investigate. But here we see how Arjuna could not only see from three sides the universe, but from all sides, so that he had access to all the different parts of the universe. Another feature of the universal form, and the revelation of the universal form, was the tremendous intensity of light which Arjuna said. He described it with thousands upon thousands of suns rising simultaneously. He was overwhelmed by this luminous thing. He was just totally overwhelmed. It. The third aspect of the universal form, and this is really an aspect which had never been shown before. Krishna had shown the universal form before, and I will bring your attention to one thing, to one revelation a little later. The third aspect really was a time aspect. So first there was everything there in it, and Arjuna could see it mysteriously from his one position. The second was all this light which was spreading. Third, the time. You remember Arjuna, totally overwhelmed, asked, "Who are you?" And from one of the mouth of the universal form, the answer came, "Time I am, which have come to engage all the people." Then Arjuna, just as soon as you hear about it, the goose pimples start to come on. crawling up the spine. Then Arjuna, in his utter fearfulness, saw how all the soldiers on the battlefield just dashed between them, teeth of the universal form. Time I wish had come to engage everyone, just like a chess player engages the different figures, the ladies and the kings and the towers on a chess field. Krishna, as time, engages all the people in the dance of temporality, where we, all finally are swallowed by Mrityu Sarva Harascha, and another aspect of time, the death. The death is also Krishna. It's a in his feature of the time. So I must say, in this morning's lecture, I would like to praise Srila Prabhupada, and I will slowly approach the subject matter now by leaving for a little while the gigantic universal form and coming to so something very interesting in human psychology. It is that everyone is so totally convinced that his or her worldview is correct, even when something is shown better. It is a feature of the human mind which is just so utterly fascinating and frustrating at the same time. It is, as an example, I would like to give Duryodhana. Duryodhana was so utterly atheistic that even when the Lord showed the universal form, a partial manifestation of the universal form, he could not see him or recognize him. It is, before the battle of Kurukshetra, where we have to investigate Duryodhana's morbid psychology, Krishna came to make peace, to offer a peace deal, so to say, to Duryodhana. And Duryodhana, who heard Krishna explaining how the Pandavas were unjustly treated, reacted like this. I have investigated my mind. If there is any shadow of malice towards the Pandavas, I have asked myself if at some time I was unjust and unfair to the Pandavas. For a long, long time, I thought, if maybe I'm biased towards the Pandavas. And I have come to the conclusion that there is not a shadow of evil thought in me. The Pandavas are rascals. They do not deserve any land. Duryodhana's perspective. To shed a little bit more light into his Omsky of mind, which is just truly amazing if you hear it, let us go a step further. In this, Duryodhana was, in other words, highly uncooperative when it came to, make a deal for the peace. And finally, Krishna, just wanting to show that he's on the side of the Pandavas, just wanting to give a sign to that wicked assembly, showed a partial manifestation of the universal form. At that time he did not reveal the time aspect. He showed you many arms and so on. Duryodhana, who was so much convinced of his being so supreme, Duryodhana attacked with all his mighty force with an army, not all of his army. He didn't think that's, you know, he thought Krishna could be overwhelmed quite fast. He thought it was just magic, and he also knew magic, no problem. The army attacked the partial, you know, this universal form which was there in the mighty court of the Kauravas. Everyone was afraid, but Duryodhana drove his army down. Get this net, this rascal, let us throw him into the prisoner. You know, the soldiers went there with the ropes to bind him. They said, so many arms, so many arms, where should we start? But Duryodhana thought, it can't be. It's a magic, like David Copperfield. he may not have said it, but... aware of this, but anyways, he knew much better. He, you know, at the end of the battle, he just entered into a lake of water, slept inside the water, and covered it with ice. Truly magical. Not bad. Duryodhana couldn't see. One of the biggest murderers in the history of mankind, there are two actually. There was a person who had killed many policemen. Now it came to a time when he was surrounded by the policemen, and he was found in the apartment of his beloved, and there were 200 policemen just aiming guns at him. Machine fire was on him. He was crouched behind a sofa. And this man, who 3 days before had just, you know, he was there in a car with his beloved, and a policeman just said, "Well, sir, can I just see your license?" And he just said, "No problem." Pulled out a pistol, shot him, and then when he was on the ground, he took the pistol from the policeman, shot him, and continued to converse with his beloved, who was understandably shocked. Then, that same person, as he was dying, his body, you know, full of gun holes, he wrote, "I can't understand why the people are so ungrateful. I was so just. I only meant good for the people." This was his famous last lines, you know, letter. Which showed you the Duryodhana syndrome, an inborn inability to see, although you see. I want to end my, because I feel it is so important, and I have something in mind, as you can imagine. I will tell you my last psychotherapeutical analysis of Duryodhana. What exactly went on his mind? You will not believe it, but you will be shocked as the lecture continues and some other points will be revealed. Once Duryodhana answered the call of nature under a banyan tree. So as he was watering the ground, a tiny lake manifested, and in it one seed of the banyan tree was swirling around. Sorry to be so graphic, but it is necessary. So let us go through this quickly. So he was laughing. Now, a little distant, this is from Mahabharata, a maidservant passed. And when she heard the laughter of Duryodhana, she looked, and she looked away. It wasn't a decent to look. But she also started to laugh. Duryodhana, when he heard this, he finished whatever. Close to her, screamed at her, "Why are you laughing?" "I don't know." "Why are you laughing if you are not able to?" "Oh, wait a minute," he said. And she said, "I'm laughing because you laugh." Isn't it sometimes laughing is infectious? You just laugh along. "I laugh because you laugh, King. If you do not tell me the reason why you are, why I was laughing, why I was laughing, huh? Then before the sun sets, I will kill you." So, why did Duryodhana laugh? It's very difficult to say. The maidservant went. It's another long story. Where she went to make it short, she went to where Shakuni was. He was imprisoned at that time by Duryodhana. And she looked very sad. And Shakuni said, "Mother, why are you looking so sad? I mean, I can look sad. I'm imprisoned by this rascal Duryodhana, but why you?" "Well, he's going to kill me." "Why?" said Shakuni. "Is he going to kill a woman?" "Well, I laughed." "Well, that's another reason. Tell me more." And she told him. "Well," said Shakuni, "I think I can help you. What did he do when he laughed?" The maidservant told it. "Where did he do it, Shakuni?" "Under a banyan tree." Let me think. Duryodhana was, Shakuni, you know, he's extremely clever. He knew the psychological movements of the living entity. He thought for a while and then he said, gave the answer. "Tell him." He laughed for the following reason. "Here I am, a so-called mere human, but in my urine, the seed of a banyan tree is helplessly rotating. When the seed is the source of a huge tree, which some people say comes due to the design of the Lord. But here I am, a so-called mere human tree. And it's rotating in me." How human. So, see, this rascal, the maidservant was quite shocked. She had nothing to lose. She had no other idea. Therefore, when Duryodhana said it, Duryodhana, "This is not your intelligence. Who told you? I will spare your life. But who told you?" "Shakuni, the prisoner." Okay, so he went that minute to Shakuni and made him his advisor. So, You can just see. This is a very, very big problem of the conditioned soul. The conditioned soul is held by two types of Maya. Guna Maya, which is manifesting in the 24 elements who are controlled by the gunas, by the three material modes of nature. Krishna in the Gita speaks about this, Daivi Hesha Gunamayi. He says, this material energy is extremely difficult to overcome. Now, one other aspect of this Maya, not just Guna, the elements, which are, well, everything is Guna Maya, but there's these elements, material elements, but then there's what is called Jiva Maya, and that is something very subtle. It's what affects the conditioned soul, the Jiva Bhata, the bound conditioned soul, in two ways. One is avaranatmika shakti, that is a covering potency, which covers the true knowledge. And then there's a prachekatmika shakti, something like this. And this energy of Maya, or this aspect of Maya, this working of Maya, just keeps it away from God by illusions, many illusions. Duryodhana is a classical example of a conditioned soul who's bound by a physical body which works under the laws of material nature, the elements of it, and by a mind which is totally controlled by the covering and distancing feature, or throwing feature, as Prabhupada translates it, of the Lord. Each one of us, as long as we are condemned, maybe those ones of us who are still conditioned souls, are covered by this energy of the Lord. And it is extremely difficult to overcome that influence. Only if the living entity comes in contact with the saintly devotee of the Lord can he actually overcome this mayic potency and this brings us to a very important point. The process of diksha or initiation, as described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, is twofold. It said the process of giving knowledge and karma is taken. I want to concentrate a little bit on the giving knowledge. Giving knowledge is something which is an ongoing process on education. Therefore, it is not enough to just sit before the initiation fire. It's not a one-time affair, this connection with our spiritual master, but it is an ongoing affair which can only come to fruition if it remains an ongoing affair. That is, you continue to receive knowledge from your spiritual master. At every moment in time, let us say, every aspect of our spiritual life, we are dependent on this process where the spiritual master guides and instructs us. Otherwise, this covering potency and throwing potency, this, let us call it in one word, Jiva Maya, remains an ongoing process. We are in the world where this is going on. When I was a child, I was very wild. And one of my wildness was, I would always I would never sleep in the night but do different unimportant activities, and I was tired in the morning. And I remember one day I had to go to school, and we were on the way. There was a huge, in German you say Pfütze, it's when it rains, puddle, isn't it? Puddle, is that
puddle?
Yes, it was a big puddle on the street, just quite big. And because I was late for school, I decided to run so fast through the puddle that there was no chemical possibility for the water to really make me wet. And I ran and ran, and of course fell, push, and came back to school. It is not possible to run through water so fast. In the same way, no one gets through this material world. You know, so he can be as fast a runner as his muscles allow, and as his mind allows. But if we don't obtain the mercy of our spiritual master in the form of instructions in an ongoing way, it's simply not possible. And this brings me to a very, very important point. That notes. The mercy of the Srila Prabhupada, his ongoing compassion with his disciples, which is something which nourishes us in our journey through this mayic world, where we are bound souls and remain bound souls if we do not have this ongoing mercy. Srila Prabhupada has many qualities. And one, or the quality which I personally, someone who wants to become a Vaishnava, a real devotee, find the most relevant in my own endeavors in Krishna consciousness, that is the compassion. Compassion is a great quality which is one of Srila Prabhupada's just overwhelming jewel-like qualities. Compassion is also a quality which we will need to develop in order to become good preachers in the movement for Krishna consciousness. Compassion is the quality which can also open the knot of our false egos, our own private Duryodhana neurosis. That is described in spiritual literature. Between us and the Lord, this is a Puranic description of the false ego, is a mountain. The substance of this mountain is not granite or basalt. The substance of this mountain is called Aham and Mameti. I am at, this is mine. False ego manifests in these two thought processes. And it is what is separating us from Krishna. See, Duryodhana could have surrendered so many times to the Lord, but no, aham, I am a big king, and Mameti, the kingdom which I stole away or took away from the unqualified Pandavas, that's mine. He was totally captured in this aham Mameti, this mountain. Therefore he could not take advantage of Krishna's presence by surrendering to him. As long as a conditioned soul keeps this mountain and even increases it maybe as he gets older, it will be difficult for him to go to the other side. It is impenetrable and inconquerable. So compassion for others wears this mountain down, because you are no longer thinking in your own benefit, in terms of your own benefit, but you want to benefit others. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he sings, oh, when will I become a compassionate benefiter of the conditioned souls? It is very good medicine. You know, it is it wears down this mountain in the heart, the elixir of compassion. There's an interesting story which I recently picked up in an interreligious preaching where we were invited to represent Hinduism. Some other Hindu told it and thought it's nice to hear. There was a monk who lived in the Himalayan mountains, and he practiced sadhana for 6 years, but after 6 years had the feeling he had not really made advancement. So he went, he wanted to bloop, in other words. He wanted to go to his village and take a wife and be realistic. When he went down, he saw a man who had a threat. And with this threat, he was... thank you. He was... sawing, is it called sawing? Sawing at an iron rod. What are you doing? The monk. I'm trying to saw this iron rod. I need it for some mechanical purpose. Oh, said the monk. This person is very patient. Why am I so impatient? He might probably have a few years to do this. Why, after 6 years of practicing, I want to be a self-realized soul? After all, there is a mountain in the heart. I have to overcome the mountain, not just an iron rod. And he went back to the Himalayan mountains and gave it another try. But after 3 years, nothing had happened. No realization. Still so tense in the heart area and in the mind area. He went finally, he said, I can't make it. Now on his way, he saw a little mouse, which was seriously trying to bear down a stone like this. Then the monk, you know, investigated and saw it was a stone which had fallen from a mountain and had closed the hole of the mouse. And she wanted to continue her comfortable living in that same hole, and was therefore determined to gnaw away the stone. Oh, said the mountain, she's very patient. Shouldn't I be patient? And veering down this mountain in the heart, he went back to the Himalayan mountains. But after 3 years, nothing had happened. It will become really good. Now, he decided, okay, this is too much. I will change my ashram. And went back to the village. He arrived there when it was late. Everyone was preparing for the rest in the night. He saw one dog on the road. It was a dog who had a terrible accident cars had rolled over his, and carts had rolled over, or maybe one cart had rolled over his behind. The leg was broken, it was an open wound, and there was many flies, you know, of the aggressive type, eating away at his flesh. He was, pus was surrounding his eyes. He had been sick for quite some time. And there were worms eating at the anchoring of his tongue. He could only make the sound for the man. Sort of, this dog is dying. I should give it. It's some relief. He brought, took something like a bowl, which he found nearby, a discarded bowl, went to the river, washed it, brought some water, brought it to the dog. Dog drank it. And as he drank it, he transformed into something which looked either like a demigod or a great saint. And he said, "Now I bless you. Now you are able to get somewhere with your sadhana. Because for the first time in your life, you have thought, it's not for me. You have not thought of aham and mameti. I want to make spiritual advancement. My advancement must come. Otherwise, I'm not happy in my life." For the first time in your life, you thought of others. Congratulations. You have come out of the prison of your false ego at least a little bit. I found the storytelling. I do not know of its Shastric reference. I can imagine it's a folk, something which is transmitted through folklore. Maybe one day we will find it in one of the Upanishads. I cannot tell you this. But I think the point is good. Vasudev Datta was merciful, compassionate for the fallen souls, and is praised for this. Parikshit Maharaj, at the time of his death, and usually a dying man expects a lot of mercy or compassion for him, that everyone, you know, gives him relief, and he was thinking how in the sixth canto Sukadev explained, you've taught about the health in the fifth canto, but now you have to explain how people can get free from these health. I'm totally disturbed by this. People have to suffer like this. He's an example also of compassion, karuna. Usually one wants to be the object of compassion when one dies, but his compassion is still of the outgoing nature for others. These are examples in our tradition which we know of. Prabhupada had this compassion, and he is, as far as we as the members of that of the, his society are concerned, the glowing example of this compassion. If Prabhupada, you know, it must have been, it's a mixture of following the order of his spiritual master, which brought him out of Vrindavan to us, but it is also compassion, because there were times when Prabhupada wanted to give up his preaching. I will tell you first what Prabhupada had to undergo. There was also meat. For us, I don't know how you would react. I can imagine also. It's not possible. I knew I once had some medicine which needs to go in the fridge, and I was a little bit dependent on this medicine, and I remember, you know, when you're traveling, you sometimes stay at the houses of people you preach to. And remember, first thing I did, take the medicine out of the car to put it into the fridge so that it would survive. And I saw a wurst in there, piece of meat. So when I saw that, actually I don't want to repeat the word before the Danish, before, but I don't care, you know, I can't put it in the same fridge, it just goes against my feelings. So we found a little river and put it into a stone on it and in the river and so on. So, Prabhupada had to never see, had any connection with meat. We know even when the doctor and the little baby said there's no way to cure typhoid except of following the mythology of the proteins. He needs chicken soups, in other words. You know, then even he could not eat it, you know, it was not possible. He put it there. In San Francisco, we hear from the Lilamrita a telling story. There was a crazy man who always disturbed the lecture, making noises. So at the end of the last kirtan, Prabhupada's procedure was to cut up an apple and distribute it as mahaprasad, as prasadam. So that crazy man was still there who had disturbed all the while. Prabhupada had to deal with it. You know, crazy men, they get towards an amount of aggression where it has to be dealt with. So Prabhupada called the crazy guy. And he brought him a trail of the plate on which the apple was. But on the plate, he put the apple and the knife. As a choice, what would he take? Would he become peaceful and, you know, become decent, or would he take the knife and kill? Imagine this moment. Have you ever been in preaching situations where you have been attacked, where you have been confronted with naked aggressiveness? Do you remember how it feels? I think, Priyavrata, you must remember going to festivals and meeting drunken people who are all of a sudden they take a bottle and go like, kang, and you know, have this murderous instrument before you. As preachers, we have been off, you know, it, your heart goes like, because you know, preachers are generally not in the kshatriya mood, you know, you get fear. Imagine the situation for Prabhupada. The whole room was like froze. What does the crazy man take now? The knife for attack or the apple? And he, you know, went like took the apple, by the way. You have to be compassion. You have to have a mission in order to go through these moments and continue alone in the land of the wild minds, in America. So, and this is something so on. Then he had to be tolerant when his own devotees, you know, began to show weaknesses, which every disciple does. When they, you know, he went into the naked communities, his devotee said, we can't chant 64 rounds, you know, and brought him down to 16 rounds. But there is something which Sasvarupa Maharaj describes. It came to a time when the first marriages, which were arranged at that time by Srila Prabhupada, were divorcing. Now, this shows, if someone divorces out of a marriage, it shows it is not really that he or she have a spiritual understanding. Whatever happens in the marriage, good or bad, it's meant for your growth. You are an eternal spiritual soul who need some experiences to go through. If you divorce and run in the middle of the process away, it will come back again to you, this lesson. So the divorce shows a lack of spiritual understanding. I know I'm seen as a dinosaur here saying this, but it is, you know, we have to keep at least some philosophy. The Bhagavatam class, it is not good to divorce, because it doesn't help, even if you just approach it from the opportunistic view point, which is very much in our genetic codex. It is foolish to divorce, even from that. So when Prabhupada saw this, he was disappointed. He said, I'm going back to Vrindavan. I'm a sannyasi. Why do I have to hear about such things? But again, he accepted his disciples back. He stayed with us. Why? Out of compassion, the sincere desire to help. Some sannyasis fell down. He didn't condemn them or reject them for breaking their vows. He said, oh, come back, and marry. Situate yourself where you can be peacefully executing the process of Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada was so compassionate that Sasvarupa Maharaj describes, he sometimes cried and couldn't sleep in the night from this feeling, my disciples want to help them. Why are they doing like this? Only sometimes his disappointment manifested in words, like before he said, you Westerners have two permanent diseases, he said. You want to hear how the self-realized soul sees us. Don't be disappointed. You are so attached to sex, and you always quarrel. Two diseases. But Prabhupada remained with us. Was always helpful, always malleable, always merciful. I once was an object of his mercy. He never forget this. He was asking for a massage, and his servant, and it was also Satsvarup Maharaj, had caught a fever, so he needed someone else to massage him. Because I happened to sit before his door, making pshht, pshht, pshht to all devotees who passed by. That was my service. The choice fell on me, but when I entered his room, I was so utterly fearful. I became red, and oceans of sweat left me and left a trail on the floor behind me. Maybe not that, but almost there. And shaking with nervousness, Prabhupada looked at this pile of misery. He said, he's very concerned, very, he smiled a little bit, he had understanding. He didn't say, oh, this useless guy, let him, why did they send me such a fool? he saw, and he said, he looked me into the eyes, just totally normal and relaxed, that I would lose my fear. Just like my grandpapa in a good mood, like this. And it, just do your service, he said, and it helped. This thinking of the other, what does compassion mean? You have to think of the other. What is his situation or her situation? And then going there into the situation and helping. The Red Indians say, if you want to understand another person, you have to walk a mile in his moccasins. These are the Red Indian shoes, This is something which, if we could develop this, even a shadow of this, which would help our communities to just become much stronger communities than they all are already. This would help our preaching to become much more, how would you say, yes, real. Sometimes a preacher, the young preacher I have seen in my case, I think I'm a little extreme, but I always wanted to establish my points over the other points. You know, preaching, you are wrong, and this is right. You know, going on the street and calling the people chicken eaters. Yeah. This is like the boxing preacher. Someone comes to get his advice. He will show how much he knows and how nonsensical the other person is and how superior he is. This is a boxer amongst the preachers. It's unreal. Preaching is a activity. You have to help someone, and you can't help someone if you... You know, if you do not care to enter his frame of mind, understand how he looks at the world, how he walks miserably in his moccasins, and so on. Compassion means to first recognize the misery of someone else, then to want to help the other person, and then to actually do something to help him. In the 8th canto, there is a verse which says, there is no higher way of worshipping the Lord than by being compassionate to the fallen souls. You might remember a similar verse in the Bhagavad Gita where the Lord says, no servant is dearer to me than the one who preaches this knowledge to the devotees. It's something important. It's not... Und ferner liefen, you know, something which is under discussion if we can develop it or not, you know, should first become aware of this and make the simple practice at the devotees with whom we live. Try to understand them in their, you know, in their, how they see it and how they must feel and so on and so forth. And then try to, you know, get the feeling, he's a devotee, she's a devotee of the Lord, let me, you know, help or at least be not a stumbling stone in the way. And then, yeah, do something practical. I know in the old times when we were in the temple, we had this dictum or this purpose. We would do one service a day for one Vaishnava. Oh, you have a dirty shirt, I'm going to work. I'm washing in 1 hour, give me your shirt. Then we would wash the shirt of the fellow Vaishnava. Yeah. It helped us. It helped us to be ready for the street, you know, to be of a serving mood, of a mood of giving, a servant of the Vaishnavas. Preacher has to be a servant. Like a mailman is a servant, he brings a message. You know, if he thinks, oh, why all these letters, 20 intense pages of Prajalpa, you know, just throws it away, you know, who cares? No, he is a servant, he brings something, bring out a message. This is how the preaching becomes real and how life becomes real and understanding. We can learn of the compassion of Srila Prabhupada and embrace a little bit or develop a little bit this compassion, and then our spiritual advancement will go very brisal, because we don't think of aham and mameti, we think of others. Hare Krishna, thank you very much. I want to excuse myself if some of my wordings were not palatable. not befitting the audience. Duryodhana, you know, look at him, just don't look at the example, look at his mind, then you will overcome the offense taken in this example. So the Mahabharata, that is bad. On a sober stomach, it's bad to hear it. But this is how the condition, so it is bound by Jiva Maya. And if there's no, if Prabhupada would not have taken compassion on us, no chance. And if we don't take compassion on others in the preaching mission, there's no chance for the other people. Prabhupada said, the best way of paying the debt to the spiritual master is to preach vigorously like me, he said. To preach vigorously like me. If you just go out or you know, do something for preaching, whoa, it will take this mountain down like a very good river which takes the mountain down. A very good process. Do you have any questions regarding this?
Yes. What was your name?
Raga Thakma.
Yes, Raga
Thakma. I don't understand Dhritarashtra's personality, because when Bhishma and Dronacharya chastised him, he wanted to attack the Pandavas, and Dronacharya also agreed.
Dhritarashtra's mentality, why he didn't stop Duryodhana, there were many opportunities, is he is in the Svajana concept. Svajana, Sva means own and Jana means people. He thinks my own people is, that is the, I have to take care of their welfare. It's a condensed form of nationalism, you know, my own country, it goes even my own people. That's why sometimes Grihamedi life, not Grihastha life, not a Krishna conscious Grihastha ashram, that's a very good ashram also for making advancement if you are in this situation, if it is for you the place. But a Grihamedi life is often compared to be a dark well because you can't get out of this concept. My people, they're my family people. You lose your broadness. Svajana, yeah, it was more so condensed in his case that he just couldn't understand.
But what, was he double-faced? Because when he spoke with Bhishma, he agreed with them. And
yes, sometimes, you know, by good association, he got the right idea. Mm-hmm.
Well, you spoke very beautifully about compassion. So what about this example? I take your money, and then I throw you out of the temple, and but it's for your own good. Isn't that also compassion? Make you suffer, break up your marriage, take your money, and when you're not submissive, I throw you out. But it's actually for your own good. You just can't accept it.
The question is a question relevant to the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. What if someone for compassion's sake does something which the other person can't understand? Now, there are different ways to approach this very complicated questions capable of blocking the intelligence of the lecturer. I think what Maharaj says is clear. We are sometimes too rough with each other. Now, the compassion of a Krishna conscious man is based on a spiritual type of compassion, not the material thought. I'm talking purposefully in a way which should stimulate the thought of my audience. Don't interrupt me, I will come to the end. Let me come to the end. So, There is no use in material compassion. And he gave the example of the drowning man who is not saved by the social worker. Why? Because the social worker has a wrong sort of compassion or feeling to help. He takes the coat and not the man out of the water. Therefore, let's be spiritual. Let us not be taking care of the bodies and of the minds of people, but of the souls. This is very often the background of Krishna conscious compassion. But this is very important now. This does not mean to be ununderstanding towards the miseries of others. I have heard that Prabhupada gave sometimes his own pullovers to devotees who were feeling cold. I have heard this in the case of Yadurani. She got a pullover from Srila Prabhupada. We now think a lot of social development in our movement, and Srila Harikesh Maharaj very exemplarily takes a step towards this direction in our zone. It is a talk in many parts of ISKCON, but I have heard that he is extremely concerned to establish like a social forum where these things, where unkindness towards devotees or ununderstanding towards the devotees don't go on any longer, where there are means for devotees who may not fit any longer in a temple to go in a way which they voluntarily want into their future in Krishna consciousness, and finding work, finding finding engagement, finding a place in their lives. Sometimes we may have wronged devotee under the name of spiritual compassion, to put it very politely. Is this satisfying, Maharaj? I had to, I walked at the first part of the answer a little bit like a drunken man to find my ground, because I was totally unsettled by your very intelligently worded point. Yes. Yes. How does one know if one is sentimental or compassionate? This is difficult. I will tell something totally shocking to my Swedish audience. I feel that there is some place in Krishna consciousness for sentiment, for feelings, because I feel a devotee is a human being. I may be totally sentimental in this analysis, but I maintain we are also human beings. My philosophical reason is, in the 9th chapter of Gita, 9:30, Prabhupada, he says that there are two sides of a devotee. The conditional side, where all our conditioning is, our programming, you could say, by the modes of nature. And then the constitutional side, that is the spiritual aspect. Devotee does constitutional activities, worship, service, and so on. But there are also conditioning activities, like going into the bathing room, and so on. So feeling, sentiment is good. It's a human attribute. It's necessary for a full-grown individual. This disturbing thing where our preachers say, don't be sentimental. What they have in mind is, when someone totally got, gets carried by the mind into some unrealistic realm of, you know, goofiness, which is, that was not a good word, you know, unrealistic mental frame which is totally beyond reality, then, you know, it's not so good, like a person going into Vrindavan and thinking, oh, Krishna, Krishna, your Western devotee wishes to see you and pleasing you by an offering of his tears, Krishna. You know, something like this, you know. But a little feeling is desired. Even if, you know, it can't be, or be a human being, this much I am saying here. I'm aware that you all know the philosophy very well. I'm putting the humanness on this scale because sometimes we can, by adopting spiritual philosophy, you know, to a degree where we are not realized, we can lose our humanness by understanding it wrongly. Therefore, we need guidance on our path. My answer is by no means meant as a complete answer, a balanced answer. I'm just putting a little weight on this side, more than it is usually done. Don't forget what you have heard about sentimentality and what is known in our circles. I'm just putting a little strong... Why should I repeat all this, what everyone knows? Put a little weight here. Other questions? Yes, Madhavi.
What we can do in this situation when we offer some service to the devotee, because of contact cooking or ironing or washing, something like this, and the devotee can say, come and say, I can iron my clothes or iron.
What does he say? Yes, okay.
I can say, I can iron my clothes.
Myself, I can do it myself, yeah. It's interesting, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj gave a lecture on the concept of being the servant of the servant. This is one of our you know, values. Yeah, we want to cultivate the service value, and we apply it towards devotees also. Towards Krishna, that's the vertical line, the servant of Krishna, then also we have a horizontal line towards devotees. And so on. So, yeah, listen to this, what Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj said. There is a community, the Amish, which, you know, we are philosophically not so interested in, but they have an interesting service value. What they do is they always help each other. Now, if there is someone who you could call a misfit, Amish person, like a person who gets on other people's nerves and really behaves very bad by doing things, lying maybe to the community or maybe stealing, or something really bad, then the way to show him that he is not really, that he did wrong, the way to do that is his service is no longer accepted. The community still continues to render him service. Like when his field, for instance, when he needs work on the field to bring the harvest in, or his roof might have been damaged and they have to flick the roof, or what is it, to repair the roof. That everyone still, or the same amount of people, you know, like normal, do this. But when he comes in and says, no, and not necessary. You have so much work to do. Why don't you eat and sleep? You know, And after some time, he just feels, I better correct myself, otherwise I'm not feeling getting that social support which everyone needs in a community. That's an interesting illustration of service as a value inbuilt in a society. It's not that I do not know much about it. I only know they have, but they dress in black, that's all, and they keep to themselves. But thought it's interesting, yes? So what to do? I think you have someone in mind, and you... I can't give you the answer what to do with that unknown person. Maybe you must find another person to give some service to. Prasadam gives. Rupa Goswami mentions six dealings in the association of devotees. Giving prasadam, taking prasadam, revealing your mind, helping out to the other person, then giving gifts, taking gifts. We do this, yes, to put the oil in our social intercourse, exchange, the word. Do this, so sometimes devotees maybe feel a little stiff, so let us understand. Then we go to another person. Sometimes the biochemic doesn't work so well, then we have to find someone who's not disturbed when we approach the path of his vision. Yes?
I was just going to ask, in order to being able to be mutually compassionate towards one another, isn't it best if you try to build a little bridge of confidence?
Yeah. Compassion. Does compassion travel over the bridge of confidence to reach to the person? Confidence is good, but yeah, that someone is willing to take your help, he needs to be confident like that.
Yeah,
that's the idea.
Yeah,
you know how it feels if someone comes, Prabhu, I want to help you, and you know, this person, I won't formulate the rest of the sentence. Yes, correct. All right. My point was, compassion can be very nicely expressed through preaching. You are all beating the big drum here, consciousness God drum, for preaching all over the world with this wonderful book production. Keep on beating. The world needs to hear it again and again, and more and more and more. More books, so on. And think about this. Preaching is a compassionate work. You're doing already the supplying the world with these wonderful books. Now if you could also meditate about this point, this will help very much in Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai,
Jai Sri Gandharvika Giridhari ki
jai,
Gaur Premanandi
Hari Hari
Bol, Srila Sachinanda Maharaj ki
jai.